And you're welcome back to the second hour of the Greg Hughes Show on Highland Radio this morning. It's Donal Kavanagh on the show for the next hour. Just want to give you a few little bits of info and a few dedications before we go any further. Caller asks, can we let listeners know Burt's Big Bingo is on this Sunday, August 30th, in St Mary's Hall in Burt at 3 o'clock. The proceeds all go to the parish funds. I want to say a special good morning to Isla and Alice Lynch in Milford. They're back to school this morning after a long summer. Mammy and Daddy say have a lovely day. Best of luck to Rachel Bradley from Stranorder starting school today. Lots of love from Auntie Breed and all the gang. Now, it's confidential shredding time once again at Letterkenny Shopping Centre in association with United Shredding Company and Letterkenny Rotary Club for a donation. This time to Donegal Down Syndrome Association. You can see all your confidential documents shredded in the USL machine. It's taking place from 10:30 until midday on Friday, which is the 28th of August. Connor says, don't put the summer shirts away yet, Donald. The sun will shine next week when the children are all back in school. Oh, I never put the summer shirts away. Because believe you me, when I go out playing a ukulele on a Thursday night, the Hawaiian shirts stay on, and I'll be wearing Hawaiian shirts all winter when I'm playing the ukulele. Don't you be forgetting about that. Don't worry about that. The summer shirts will never be too far away. That is an absolute promise. I want to go to an important issue, which is the issue of the right to be forgotten. You'll recall that the Irish Cancer Society was one of a number of groups that were spearheading the call for a right to be forgotten law, which effectively means certain insurance products cannot discriminate against people who have survived cancer. One of the people very much involved in that campaign was Suzanne Dowd, who's the Senior Advocacy Officer with the Irish Cancer Society, and she joins us on the line. Suzanne, good morning.
Good morning, Donal. Thank you for having me on.
It's our pleasure, Suzanne. Suzanne, put this into context for us from the point of view of people who have survived cancers. How important is this right to be forgotten?
Yes, so on Monday, the commencement date for the right to be forgotten after cancer legislation was announced. So it will be in effect from the 15th of October this year. And what that means in practice is that insurers will be required to disregard cancer-related medical history when a person applies for mortgage protection insurance in the case that the applicant has completed active treatment 5 years ago or more. So this is, as you mentioned, an issue that we've been campaigning on in the Irish Cancer Society since we launched our research on this back in 2021. So in collaboration with Core Research, we looked into, I guess, the barriers that people with a previous cancer diagnosis were experiencing when looking to access financial products and services. And what we heard was that 1 in 5 of those respondents to the survey had difficulty accessing mortgage protection insurance. And the issues that, or the barriers that they were facing, included outright refusal, and also many experienced, or I guess were quoted, very loaded premiums to the point that they were unable to afford the product in that instance. So it was an issue that we were hearing about time and time again from people through the research, but also people coming to our internal channels, our support lines, our daffodil centres, etc. And of course, when you think, I guess for a lot of people, when they think of a cancer diagnosis, they don't necessarily think of maybe the financial implications that it might have on you years later. And unfortunately, it was the case for a lot of people, that they were locked out of accessing these financial products. And we are hopeful now that when it comes into effect in practice on the 15th of October, that these people, of which there are many that have been unable to access mortgage protection, will now be able to, and that their previous cancer diagnosis won't be considered when they're looking to access it.
Now, this could raise questions for people who are filling in forms. Just off the top of my head, an example I would consider would be if I'm filling in, say, a form for travel insurance or something like that, which would have a health element to it. If there is a question on that, please give any details of previous diagnosis or conditions. Does this effectively mean I don't have to put down a previous cancer diagnosis on that form? Or is it the fact that I put it down on the form, but the company is legally obliged effectively to discount it? Can I just not write it down on the form anymore after 5 years of active treatment and 5 years of total remission?
Yeah, just to be clear, that if for the instance of this legislation, it's specific to mortgage protection insurance.
Oh, it's specific. It is specific to mortgage protection. Yeah. Okay.
Yes. Yes. But it will. Yes. So if the, when the person filling out the form, they still will need to disclose that their previous cancer, maybe cancer-related medical history, but it now will be a statutory obligation for the insurer to disregard it if the active treatment happened 5 years ago or more. So that's what the difference will be. So there, it's the stat, there's a legal onus now on the insurers to disregard that previous cancer diagnosis.
Would you like to see that spread out into other products? As I said, travel insurance, which would have a health element in case you get ill while you're on your holidays, perhaps being part of that, or other insurance products as well?
Yes, and I think that is definitely, I think this is the, it's a massive milestone for us to see it go through an instance of mortgage protection, but definitely down the line it would be brilliant if it was expanded to other products. We know that people have issues, as you say, accessing travel insurance amongst others, and we are keen to follow suit of our EU counterparts such as France and Belgium, who have a wide span of products included under their Right to be Forgotten legislation. So we would definitely be keen for Ireland to follow suit. But I think we're taking the win on this as it stands now with mortgage protection. We hope going forward that it will be expanded across to other
Absolutely.
Products as well.
Suzanne Dowd, thank you very much indeed. That's Suzanne Dowd, their Senior Advocacy Officer with the Irish Cancer Society. Suzanne, thank you very much indeed. Now, let's look at a couple of your comments before we go to a break with regards to Dolly Parton. Caller says, Donal, I am old enough to remember when Elvis died and I cried as a child. I put Dolly up there with this. She was an absolute one-off for music and will be remembered for years to come. Rest in peace, Dolly, and love to Margot. That's from Rosaline Connolly. Indeed, I remember when Elvis died. I was listening, believe it or not, I was listening to Radio Luxembourg under the covers. I would have been in or around about the 13 mark. Was I 13 or 14? I was 13, 14 when Elvis passed away. And I was listening to Radio Luxembourg under the covers in my bedroom, and the 11 o'clock news was on, sponsored by Silvercrane Shampoo, of all people. And they announced that Elvis Presley had died. And it was, wow. And that week, Way Down had entered the Luxembourg charts at number 28. And the following week, Way Down was in the chart at number 1. Caller says, Dolly was among the most talented songwriters in history, an even better example to all of us to be good people. Absolutely true. And as I said, and I referenced this with Lee, when you look at the work that Dolly Parton did funding research into COVID vaccines when COVID hit, the work Dolly Parton did was instrumental in formulating and putting on the market the drug Moderna. Now, many people in this area, myself included, got Moderna as their COVID vaccines. So, and we actually joked in our house at the time that I had the Dolly Parton vaccine, because that was the vaccine that I got at the time of COVID. And, you know, to think that someone like Dolly Parton had done so much. Pauline said, very sad news. God rest her. Another of the greats gone. Tony, just been reading about the sad news. One of the greatest. Tracy, when she walked out on stage with Leanne Womack when I was in National for the first time, loved her music, her songwriting, her energy, and all she did for the Smoky Mountains. Roisin, she seemed so genuine. Another legend lost. R.I.P. Dolly. Rosemary, I'm so sad. A big personality. Every song was fantastic. The fact that she came from such poverty, and look what she achieved. And Pauline, may Dolly rest in eternal peace with all of the angels and the saints. And we'll go back to, and Lee referenced this as well, and so many people are referencing this today. When you think about great songwriting, and you think about the great songs of, you know, the past 50 years, Dolly Parton wrote Jolene and I Will Love You on the same day. Both of them. Now, for any songwriter to write a stone-cold classic as big as either of those on any day of their career is momentous. To write two in one day, quite frankly, that was staggering. I remember covering a meeting of Glenties Municipal District some time ago when Councillor Brian Carr, who had been out for a while because of an incident, told the story of why he was out. And it transpired that he and family members became embroiled in a very, very worrying and distressing incident on the beach and at Tremor. And he told the story and finished with a plea for the introduction of identifiers that would allow for quicker emergency responses to emergencies on our beaches. And there has been some very important movement in this regard. Brian Carr, good morning.
Morning, Donald. Morning, listeners.
Brian, as I said, I well remember that meeting of Glenty's MD. It happened to be a meeting I was covering, and I was there when you told your story. And the story was, it was a story of trauma, and it was a story of ultimately triumph. And it's a story everybody walked away from. But just first off, before we go into the actual coastal location code launch, tell us what happened to you on Tremor Beach.
Yeah, and the 15th of August, we just, myself, wife Marie, met our son Ben and his cousin Amelia. We headed to the beach. They were in the water, and all of a sudden, a riptide, and the two children were just dragged out to sea, and just instinctively, I tried to go in and try and save them, and then I got in difficulty, and thankfully to as we still call them, and we always will call them, our four heroes, Matthew, Dalton, Tarlock and Joseph, came along and they rescued us. And because of those four lads, that we're here today. And look, I'm looking forward to a launch. If you said the coastal location codes tomorrow, it all bore out of that incident, as you said, on that day, Donald. And I'm in a very happy position here today to be saying, as I said, looking forward to a launch tomorrow of something that will hopefully benefit other people later on.
Because the point, and I'll be honest, and I interviewed you on that day as well, and the point I took away from what you were saying on that day was, okay, the drama, as it were, of the story. But the real, for me, the real takeaway, sort of news angle on the story you told that day was the difficulty that was that your wife was having in actually contacting the emergency services and telling them where to come to. Because it was on a beach.
Yes. Yeah, Marie was on the beach, and she was watching everything unfold in front of her, us in the water and everything. And at the same time, she was trying to communicate with, she dialed 999 and she got the emergency services. And she was trying to communicate to the ambulance service where she was. Now, Tremor Beach, it's between Ardra and Rossbeg. It's a well enough known for surfers and that, and visitors, there's a caravan park there, but anybody from outside the area wouldn't really know it. So the ambulance service and the call taker just couldn't get her head around where she was or what. And we looked at the phone when I was in the hospital afterwards. We looked at the phone, and Marie was on the phone to the ambulance services for 7 minutes. Now, 7 minutes in a situation, a traumatic situation like that, it's a long time. And Marie, just in the end up, she just says, she's originally from Rossbeg, Marie, so she gave her air code from her home place, which is a few kilometres away, hopefully that when the ambulance would get there, that they would talk to somebody and get directions to the beach. And that's exactly what happened. They came into the area. The ambulance driver spoke to the local drove in front of them to the beach then that we were on. But Marie hung up after 7 minutes. She couldn't get it. So the people on the ground then were saying that I had to be, you know, because there was no ambulance coming, so that she rang 999 again and asked for the Coast Guard. And the helicopter 118, they were being dispatched. They were looking for, you know, air code. Look, Marie didn't have an air code of anything near the beach. She didn't have her location settings turned on. They were looking for a ping. They were looking for what, three words. And she just had none of this. The helicopter came over then. It flew past our beach heading for Nairn.
And eventually...
rang Malin Head and he got them turned back.
Yeah.
So it was just the whole thing that where we were, there were just serious difficulties in trying to get them to that location. So, and as you said then, when I came back in November, the first thing I'd done was brought in a motion to Donegal County Council, asking them to see if they would look into providing ID numbers or air codes or something for beach, for coastal locations, beaches, piers, you know, slipways, for something that people, you know, they can trip and fall, they could be involved in an incident in the water or whatever, but it's just a code or something that can locate them to a certain area.
So what's being launched on the beach at Nairn tomorrow is a coastal location code. Effectively, it's a pilot project that's going to run in Donegal, and this is a code. It's effectively, not to put too fine a point on it, it's an air code for beaches and for other coastal access points that doesn't require a building, but will allow emergency services, be it the ambulance or be it the Coast Guard helicopter or whoever, that will allow them to pinpoint the area that they're being called to.
Yeah, that's it in a nutshell, really. You know, it's just for speed and accuracy for the emergency services to identify where the emergency has taken place. It's a sign. It's been rolled out over six beaches at the start. It's a pilot phase. And then eventually, over the next number of months, it will be rolled out to all the blue flag beaches and the designated bathing areas in Donegal, which numbers altogether, I think, is 22 beaches. And then later on, next year, it will be rolled out starting at Struve, Blue Flag Beach, anti-clockwise around Donegal, all the way down to south of Bundoran. So the numbers will be high because there is a lot of coastal locations there. Like Donegal has 1,200 kilometres of coastline between the county and the islands. So it's a lot. There'll be a lot of numbers, but it's just a simple... The sign is a yellow and red sign, the same colour as the lifeguards. It's going to be on the beach in all these locations, on the pier or whatever, and it'll have a DL identification number. Yeah. Like Nairn Beach now is DL110. You don't need any fancy phone. As long as you have a phone that can dial 999 or 112, you can just turn around and look at that sign and give the DL116, and the services will know exactly your location. And you can be from any country in the world, as long as you can say DL116, that you can give the location of your emergency. And I'm not going to say it's simple and easy, but it's just something that it's been there and everybody had the idea. It's just since my incident now, I came along and I've been pushing. And I have to say, like when I, as you said at the meeting, Michael McGarvey, the head of services and environment, was very receptive and he thought this was a great idea and brought it forward. And Aidan Smith and Kevin McCloskey have been working on this since, and they have been working with the Coast Guard and myself. We've had numerous meetings, and tomorrow, as you said, this is going to be launched tomorrow, and the lads will probably tell you I've been torturing them to get it done, but I've started, so I'll finish now and get all of Donegal
And the great thing too is, I mean, we can see other councils picking up on this, and I'd be very surprised if there haven't been other councils in touch with you already, because I know you're a networker, and through your party you'd be in touch with colleagues all over the country within Sinn Féin. So, I mean, I'd be very surprised if you haven't discussed this with colleagues in Mayo or Galway or Kerry or Waterford or wherever.
I've had the conversation. You're on the ball, Donal. I've had the conversation. We're just, as I said, Donegal first. We're going to try it. We're going to get it out there, get it up and running, making sure all the, you know, everything's ironed out, that everything's proper and correct. Like, there is different codes out there. Like, we've got three words, locate. But this one here, we just feel that it's simple. It's just a number, and it's DL. And then if it moves down, then it can go to Leitrim, it can go to Mayo, as you said, any county in the country.
It can be MO or KY or CE.
MO, yep.
And in fact, what they can do is they can actually use the same designated lettering that's on the car number plate, so they don't even have to come up with new letterings. You've already got a specific letter for every coastal county through the number plate. So it's all there, ready and waiting.
Yeah, and it's as I said, it's ready made. It's just to get it out there, and it's the same as the Wild Atlantic Way. Maybe this here is just to be signposted now the whole way around the coast. And we are an island after all, and the waters around us everywhere. So it's just the coastal location code. And as I said again, Kevin McCloskey and Aidan Smith, I have to thank them for all the work they've done on this. And looking forward to tomorrow, the Coast Guard and the ambulance services and the Gardaí and everything is all going to be there tomorrow and down at the launch of this, and we'll see the signs. The signs are up already. They have them up in Tremor, where the incident happened last year. They're up in Nairn Beach.
Yeah.
They're up in other beaches already. So, you know, it will save lives. It's the speed of identifying where the incident has taken place, and this number here will just, you know, it'll speed everything up, and you know, time is very important in an emergency.
Yeah. Now, a caller actually, it's funny because I think you did give a very brief reference to this. A caller has just said, check out an app called What Three Words. It's amazing and will find your location within a few feet, which is all very well. But as you said, at the time, Marie didn't have access to What Three Words, wasn't quite familiar with that as a protocol. And, you know, she wasn't able to utilise it. Someone else saying, after a week after the Tramore incident, a caller says, there was an incident in Port New and a man was saved. The life buoy wasn't roped. Is there anyone can check that these life buoys and be responsible for them? I know that that is being looked at, I think, by the council. Slightly separate issue. Now, the caller, this is an interesting one, actually. Not necessarily linked with the marine, but a caller says, if you are lost in any area, go to the nearest ESB pole, find the number on it, give that number to the emergency services, and they can check the ESB website and see the closest area of where you are. That's another one, but that obviously there's not going to be an awful lot of ESB poles on Tramore Beach, I suppose. But I mean, again, it's all good advice. But certainly, I think the coastal location code is one that's really going to be work. And the more simple you can make it, and the more buy-in you have from the emergency services, which importantly you do have, the better.
Yeah, the What Three Words is fantastic if you have the app downloaded. Yeah. But in the middle of an emergency, you're not going to be downloading.
Yeah.
And if you remember in the council that day, Donald, when I brought it in, I asked, had anybody heard of What Three Words? And out of about the 40 people that was in the room, only one person put up their hand, they heard of it. So it's just a matter of, it's the same with, there's a new one out there, Locate as well, another great one. But if you don't have it on your phone, and if you don't have your location settings switched on your phone, they can't do the ping. So, but this stuff is all great talking about it here now, but in an emergency, for someone to be watching what's happening and then trying to be putting on this location and turn, it just, like Marie went through it all, and I've relived it with Marie so many times, and this here is just, it's just turn around, you'll see a red and yellow sign at your coastal location, it'll have a DL number on it, you just quote that to the emergency services, and they will have your location, because there's every sign has a latitude and longitude attached to it on their system, so they will know exactly your location. So I'm not going to say it's simple, but it was there. It's just, it's a matter of being pushed forward now, and I will, you know me, Donald, I will keep pushing.
Indeed, and I have to say, sort of on a personal note, Brian, I often sit at various meetings at plenary level, at MD level, and I've been at many over the course of many, many years in this particular job. And it's lovely to see an idea develop into a decision, develop into a strategy, develop into action, and develop into something actually happening pretty much within a year.
It is, yeah.
And that doesn't always happen.
It doesn't always, as you said, at all those meetings. But you don't know how happy I am to see this comment. I know it took an incident for myself and my family to be involved in, but you don't know how happy I am to see this coming to fruition tomorrow and being launched. I'm over the moon. And as someone said to me on the street earlier this morning, they said that you will get someone mentioned to you or contact you or call you over the next number of years to say that your location code helped
save a life
with my incident.
It will.
I'm very thrilled.
And fair play to you and the family, Brian. And as we said, the bottom line of last year, thankfully, everybody walked away. Yourself and the children were taken from the water thanks to your guardian angels. And fair play to you, fair play to Michael and all the council staff, and fair play to the emergency services to get this to fruition and get it to a launch tomorrow. I think that speaks to cooperation, and it speaks to a good idea whose time had definitely come and that was absolutely necessary. Brian Carr, fair play to you and all of those. And thank you very much indeed.
Thank you, Donald. Thanks for the time. Thank you.
Just a few of your comments with regards to fishing. Caller says, aren't they giving Greenland a great offer to join? They won't be given a quota, and we expected 15. Caller says, I'd like to highlight an issue with my medication I've been using since COVID due to issues with menopause. As a pensioner, I have a medical card, so paid a very small amount toward my prescription. My medication is no longer available on my medical card and will cost approximately €60 per month. The government's providing free doctor, dentist, housing, social welfare payments, etc. to non-Irish people, and yet it's charging our own pensioners and citizens for necessary medication which was previously available on a medical card. Now, the one thing I will say, caller, is I do know there is a drug refund scheme that if you end up paying paying €60 a month, that would end up at a fairly hefty €60 a month will end up at well over €700 over the course of a year. There is a drug refund scheme where once you've paid over a certain threshold, you will be able to claim a lot of that money back. So just look into that, obviously, with your pharmacist. Caller says, I'm 65 and use a rollator from Swords to Beaumont Hospital. There is no direct bus, but Local Link go twice a day. I've used it once from Beaumont, had to phone Local Link to book the journey, told them I have a rollator. The minibus that day had no way to get into it, but walk up steps carrying my folded rollator. When I got off, I fell onto the pavement. Never again, says a caller. Another caller says, I hear the hosepipe ban's been lifted. What a joke. It was life jackets we needed. The amount of rain we get in Donegal. Right. I want to go to an issue that you'll have heard discussed on the news with regards to the Ballybuffet Stranorlar area being noted as the town in Donegal with the highest levels of vacancy, and for a time it was the highest level of vacancy in Ireland, and more recently it's now the second highest, according to new figures which coincidentally were released this morning. We're joined on the line by Martin McGowan, who is chair of the Ballybuffet and Stranorlar Chamber of Commerce. Martin, good morning.
Good morning, Donald. How are you?
I'm very well indeed. Martin, you took particular, you and others took particular exception to a recent national newspaper story which took these figures and presented them, shall we say, in a very stark and negative way.
Yeah, I thought, we had a meeting as part of the chamber. There was members of BASIC there. There was a local councillor there. There was members of BASIC, which is Ballybuffet and Stranorlar Incorporated Company. So we had a meeting with the journalists for about 90 minutes. On a Wednesday, I think 2 weeks ago. It was a very positive meeting. We tried to look very much that the glass is half full, which we believe it is. And they went away and produced the article that they produced, and it was, there's some positives within it, but you're struggling to find them. You know, the majority of it was a what we would call a hatchet job. It didn't paint the Twin Towns in a positive light. Now, the vacancy figures are concerning, and we're not going to minimise it, but it's only one part of the picture. You know, it measures commercial units, it measures classified units classified as vacant, but it doesn't tell us where the premises are derelict, if they're available to rent. It doesn't tell us if they're awaiting redevelopment or suitable for modern premises. But there is a major difference between vacant and available, and that's the point that we try to stress, but it's the point that seemed to be missed.
Yeah. And it has been the case under the geodirectory survey that Ballybuffet Stranorlar has come out as the town in Donegal with the highest figure, and it tends to be somewhere in around about the 30%. Now, the fact that the lowest in Donegal was Bundoran at 15%, it isn't as though Ballybuffet Stranorlar have this huge, huge figure and every other town in the county is really, really low. I mean, it's not that much of a difference between, say, Ballybuffet Stranorlar and Letterkenny or Buncrana or other towns. And sometimes the impression can be given that there is something special and different about the Twin Towns, which isn't really the case.
It's not the case. And while I suppose the figures is a warning sign, it shouldn't become this permanent label for the Twin Towns that's brought out every year to kind of, you know, bait us into line. There's a lot of positivity out there. And I would be in Bundoran quite often, and Bundoran from the East End to the West End is huge, but there's this, to my mind, driving past it, there appears to be a huge amount of vacant units, but then it's only coming in to 20%. These reports can be a bit mind-boggling, and the irony is that I have clients looking to move into Ballybuffet and Stranorlar. They're looking for modern offices, modern retail units of between 800 and 1,000 square foot, and there's nowhere available. This is the frustrating part. I'm on the ground as an estate agent and trying to find premises for people, and it's pretty much a challenge. Now, the positive side of that is that we have a lot of strong retailers on especially Belfast Main Street. Yeah. They're there a long time. There's not a turnover of units. They're there for generations, some of them. Like, we have with McIlhenny's, we have Foy's, we have Moraine's Factory. Like, there's a lot of large mm-hmm. employers within the town. We have, you know, many's a town would be glad to have the amount of hotels we have. We have three top-notch hotels. Mm-hmm. There's three banks. There's a credit union. We have the two German shops in Aldi and Lidl. We have Supervalue. Like, St. Joseph's Hospital will be a major employer. And then, like, as regards sport, it would be fair to say that Belfast and Stranraer would be the capital of sport for Donegal.
Absolutely.
Because you have McCoodle Park there being the headquarters. You have Finn Park being the headquarters for the soccer. You have Belfast United, Capri Rovers. You have a tennis club. You know, there's a huge amount of activity goes on in Belfast and Stranraer.
And as myself, as someone who's very much interested in the arts and theatre, I'm going to have to chuck a word in here for Conor and all the team at the Ballard Arts Centre, which is
a
phenomenal
place. Arts facility.
And a place with which I am more than familiar and have spent many, many happy hours in over the years.
Yeah, no, it is a credit to the work they're doing there. And, like, to have a facility of that nature, and, like, that was a significant investment at the time around mm-hmm. 2008 when things were starting to turn globally, that building was pushed on and was finished to a very high standard. And then it's anchored there by, I suppose, the bank on the ground floor and social welfare on the upper floors. But it is, mm-hmm. and that all commenced through the Butthall Committee, which deserves great credit too. I mean, that was effectively money raised during the dance times for show bands and that, and was invested wisely. And as a result, they were able to put up a state-of-the-art building such as the Ballard Theatre.
And we know the SEED project is coming, and even perhaps more importantly, there is a new focus on funding for restoring derelict commercial premises. A lot of focus up to now on restoring residential properties deemed derelict or vacant. Now that focus is going to come on to commercial, and the hope would be that Ballybofey Stranraer will be able to benefit as a result of that, not least the SEED project, but also the various derelict and vacant properties funding that's coming in targeted toward the retail and commercial sector.
Yeah, and like, I suppose to explain to your listeners, the SEED project, there's a lot of funding being, I suppose, bandied about, but the SEED project essentially is the doing up of the old Ritz Cinema and putting that into a state-of-the-art community building. They also plan to make the car park nearest McIlhenny's into a focal point of the town, to have a seated area, to move the car park into a multi-story behind the shopping centre, and to try and unify the shop fronts there along that shop facade of Ballybofey car park. So that's to the tune of 10 million. That is happening in the coming months. Yep. They're beginning work on the cinema. Like, there's also the Greenway, which is up on 32 million between Barnes Greenway, but it's between Donegal Town and Ballybofey. Yeah. That's going to be a terrific asset to the two towns and to the area for tourists and stuff.
So the future, Martin, is bright, and I'm really sorry to cut across, but at this point I'm going to have to say good morning to you, because we've one more item to fit in, and time, as it always does, is creeping up on us. But look, the future for the Twin Towns is looking good, and let people never look at one headline figure and say that says something negative about the Twin Towns, because the message from you as an estate agent and the Chamber Chair is the Twin Towns are thriving, the Twin Towns are open for business, and if anyone wants to go to the Twin Towns, whatever they have to transact there is going to be a success.
Exactly. And I suppose one statistic shouldn't define the Twin Towns.
Absolutely.
Like, the Twin Towns is fighting back. We're punching above our weight. And like, our chamber alone was kind of stuck at 30 members. In the last year alone, it's grown to the mid-80s. We're trying to get it to 100. So things are looking very positive. There is a momentum there. And it's the future is bright.
And along with that remain the case. Absolutely. Martin McGowan, thank you very much indeed. I want to talk about the Irish language because a B2 diploma is being taught at ATU in Donegal in conjunction with the University of Galway. And we're joined by Kathleen Leverin, who is a tutor on the B2 diploma, and by Liam McGillivray, who is a previous student on the course. Kathleen, to you first, good morning.
Majin Waitage.
Majin Mafresha. This is an important course because it's bringing people to a certain level in Irish, in the area, and the more that can be done to promote the language, I suppose, the better.
Yes, it's a course for adults and it's a part-time course. I've been teaching the course in the ATU on a part-time capacity since 2018, and the course was established well before that. And it's in conjunction with Acadún na hÖl Scoile Airde Gaeilge, which is the Gaeltacht campus of the University of Galway. And it has always been taught in the LYIT or the ATU as we know it now. And the course is for adults. It's a 2-year course. And if anybody would like to join the course, they will have an official qualification at the end of the 2 years. And it's required by many employers and career pathways now that people would have this B2 ability, the diploma, Sa Gaelic. It's based on the European framework of modern languages. And there would be an opportunity to people to fully take part in the class on a weekly basis. It's not an online course. And we get feedback given to students on their progress, and it has 4 elements: the reading, the writing, the speaking and the listening. And every year there will be an examination assessment in all 4 of those parts of the language. It's not suitable for people who just wish to drop in and to listen and take part and explore and not sit the examination. So the examinations are very important, and at the end of the 2 years the people will have the accreditation of the B2 diploma Sa Gaelic.
Liam, Kathleen has outlined what is not a holiday camp. This isn't a hobby. This is a serious business. You've been there. You're now a qualified primary school teacher. Tell us about your experience.
Yes, it was very good for me. I did it between 2018 and 2020. And so it was very good for me because it improved my spoken Irish and my written Irish. And it meant that after that, in 2023, I was able to go and do the entrance exam for Hibernia, which was included a bit through Irish. And then after that, then I qualified as a primary school teacher, and now I got a job teaching in a Gael school. So it certainly helped me along the way.
Does this pre-require a certain level of Irish, Kathleen? For
yes.
instance, I did Irish up to my Leaving Cert, which was 1981. So I had Irish, and I last did an Irish class 45 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
I can sort of go, Ziaquit, Ishmisha, Donal, Tommy O'Coney, and Letcher Cannon, and I have the very, very basic, with the emphasis on basic. Is this for me, or would you need a bit more?
I would ask you to maybe work a little bit more on your Irish and maybe join us in 2 years' time. Previous to the B2, there's an A1 level, an A2, a B1, and then the B2. And people who are in workplaces today, or maybe have been asked by their employer, or maybe if they want to go for promotion within different workplace environments, they're thinking of doing the B2. We will send them a link and they will do a short online examination that will show their ability. So if people are at a lower level, they know that they can join this course in 2 years' time. And there are people out there, maybe early retirees, who do want a pastime, but they will do the exam. Other people working in workplaces, my previous students, a couple of years ago, we had a large class. We had 22, and 22 passed after 2 years. And it was a great class, but a mixture of 18-year-olds that are studying at the early childhood education course in the ATU. There is a requirement in Ireland in the, working with children that they would have an ability of this level of B2 to be working with children. And then in the education system, I've had previous national school teachers, I've had preschool, early childhood educators, I've had secondary school teachers. And within the 2 years of our course, they have had interviews and opportunities for promotion. So this allows people to maybe work on their interview skills as well as their presentation skills through the medium of Irish. So it is a certain level, and there's no point in people just waiting until the night of the course and hopefully trying to turn up. They have to be pre-registered, and that's why if they make contact with me or if they make contact with the website Diploma in Irish B2 NUI Galway, they can get a link from CHASA 091 495 248, or myself, Kathleen Nivrin, 087 0517 597. And can I also just say, this year, on the basis of the success of the course in the ATU, we're looking to provide a second night, a second course in the Gaeltacht in Cleichanilla. The fees for the ATU are quite high, considering there is a difficulty with the price of living, the cost of living. Employers sometimes would sponsor people to do this course, but if you wish to do it in Cleichanilla in the Gaeltacht, there's a special discount of €300 per year. So we're going to offer the course on a second night this year, second night a week this year. The next time the opportunity will come for you to join this course will be September 2028.
And the new course starts?
In the ATU, we usually start on the third week, and we want to start on the third week in September in the Gaeltacht and Cleichanilla as well. If anybody wants to contact me, 087 0517 597,
and we'll get those details up in our socials as well. Folks, time has beaten us. Kathleen, Liam, that's it for the Greg Hughes Show today. Greg's back in the hot seat tomorrow. John Breslin's up next around the Northwest. Thank you to all our contributors. Thank you to all our listeners. And for myself, Donal, have a great day.